This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
2020 has been an extraordinary year.
For the people of Victoria, these fires are especially terrifying. A small number of properties have already burnt down.
The World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern.
Fire is fierce, it's moving fast, and it's getting bigger all the time. Some 140 kilometers east of Los Angeles.
CNN projects Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States.
This is the first year in my 30-year career of forecasting the world economy that I can remember such enormous switches and falls in GDP.
And it's not over yet. COVID-19 is still spreading across the world.
Germany is bracing for a much tougher pandemic lockdown.
In England, from today, we're once again asking you to stay at home.
We are now mandating that we are implementing a stay-at-home order for 3 weeks.
So there is still a risk of what we call a W-shape, a double-dip recession, where Europe or the US could go back into recession later on this year as more lockdowns are introduced.
As the dark days of winter set in, it's easy to settle into a boxer-induced slumber. But there's better news. Vaccines are on their way.
This is the news that we've been waiting to hear. Pfizer and BioNTech reporting the first results from their phase 3 vaccine trial, saying that in this interim look, the vaccine showed to be more than 90% effective.
It means that we can look through this downturn and start to think about the recovery in 2021.
Like a groundhog that emerges from its den and doesn't see its shadow.
Models are now pointing to recovery and an early spring. The vaccine news is encouraging because it significantly reduces uncertainty. We'll still need government stimulus to support us while we wait for the vaccine.
So looking forward, as recovery comes through, people will begin to think about interest rates going up and inflation going higher. It is possible that inflation begins to pick up, but I think it will be very slow because there's lots of spare capacity in the world economy at the moment.
With inflation under control,
we believe that governments should be able to run the economies hot.
Asia appears to have handled the pandemic better, and it looks to be in much better shape than the West as the world emerges from the crisis.
The focus on goods and technological production, healthcare, has meant that that region has done particularly well.
Also, we've seen an acceleration in disruptive trends, which are very exciting to us as active investors. Overall, we're positive on equities because with a recovery on the horizon, we think it's time to shift out of those stay-at-home stocks that have outperformed this year and shift into more cyclical areas of the market. It's time to stop hibernating.
And that is what we're looking forward to today. Hopefully a much better outlook for 2021. And I'm delighted to say that Johanna Kirkton, Chief Investment Officer at Schroders, and Keith Way, Chief Economist, join me today in the virtual studio to put some meat on the bones of the 2021 outlook. So later in the show, we're going to chat about markets and what we view as good, bad and ugly outcome for 2021. But in the first section of the show, we're going to concentrate on the economy, which has been ravaged by COVID. We'll start with a brief overview of what we've seen in 2020 and then look at what 2021 might bring us.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Keith, you've mentioned in some of your other interviews that you're not seeing swings in GDP like this since in your 30-year career during 2020. Can you just set the scene for us? Or what's happened with GDP and where we are now?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, if you look at global GDP, you'll see that that's probably going to be down about 4% this year, which doesn't sound like an enormous amount, but actually that's probably the highest post-war decline in GDP on record. It's even greater than the fall during the global financial crisis, which economists called the Great Recession. So global GDP then was down about 0.5%, to give you an idea, because this is including all the emerging economies as well, which always tend to grow quite rapidly, as well as the developed economies. So a fall of 4% is pretty much unprecedented in the post-war era. It's similar to what we got in the Great Depression. The good news is that there has been quite a good rebound in the second half of the year, particularly in Q3. Things are easing off a little bit at the moment, and I know we'll talk more about that. But of course, COVID hasn't gone away, and we've seen more lockdowns and restrictions, obviously here in the UK, but also across Europe. And there's a big question mark as well against the US, where COVID is still accelerating.
So it sounds like a bit of an uneven recovery. I know you've mentioned the W-shaped recovery in the past. Is that globally, or is it going to be slightly uneven across each region?
It's uneven, and it's probably a W in Europe, where we're looking at a negative quarter for the fourth quarter. It's possible that we even get a dip off in the US towards the end of this year. But for the world as a whole, it's not been a double dip, because Asia and the emerging markets, and particularly China, have remained very robust. Those economies have managed to get coronavirus under control. And also, they're very goods and trade orientated. So global trade has actually bounced back very quickly in this cycle. And this seems to be a reflection of the fact that people can still shop online, they can still buy goods, and there's been quite robust demand for goods purchases. So the part of the world that is most geared into that, which is Asia, particularly with its bias towards technology, that part has done well, and it has come back very strongly. And that's kind of supported overall global activity and prevented an outright W.
Has the West suffered more because they're more consumer focused economies?
Absolutely. So the service sector in the West, of course, is bigger, accounts for sort of 65-75% of GDP in many economies. And that, of course, has been the part that's been most hit. So, you know, when you look at the worst affected economies, you know, which unfortunately includes the UK, a lot of that is because of the large service sector that's really had to go into lockdown and closure. It's also been because of not being able to control the virus terribly well. But certainly those service sector economies have suffered quite considerably. And of course, you know, the great hope now for recovery is that those economies can bounce back as we all get vaccinated.
And you mentioned, obviously, Asia doing quite well. Is any of the latest data that's coming out of Asia still supportive of that rebound, or is things tailing off there as well?
No, it still looks very good. We had a lot of data on China this week, and our China activity indicator continues to move upwards, being driven largely by some pretty strong export data. The industrial sector is strong as well. But I should say that industry is pretty strong across the world. It's not just Asia that's got the strong industry. You know, we are seeing it across Europe and in the US and in Japan. And one of the things that we've been highlighting has been the idea that after the rebound, there was a shortage of inventory. So manufacturing industries really had to accelerate production over the last few months, and will continue to do so into the new year in order to build up those inventories again.
So quite a lot of the economies have been propped up this year by governments and central bank support. For instance, the $2 trillion bill in the US earlier this year was the largest economic relief bill in US history. Keith, can we expect similar from governments and central banks in 2021?
Well, we'll get a little bit more, but nothing like what we saw in the CARES Act. And we are going to get a bit more stimulus in the US, which is needed. But it looks like it's probably going to be more like $750 billion, you know, rather than the sort of $2 to $3 trillion that we saw before. I think stimulus is going to remain in place, though, because governments will be wary of withdrawing stimulus too early. I mean, this would be a big mistake. And I think people look back on the period after the global financial crisis and feel that the austerity came too early and really sort of dragged on the recovery. Given the very low level of interest rates in the world at the moment, there is an opportunity to keep fiscal stimulus going. And certainly this is the policy prescription that the IMF and the World Bank are urging on policymakers at the moment. So I think we will see continued fiscal support through 2021. But inevitably, the debate will begin to turn about, you know, when do you end the furlough scheme? When do you have to raise taxes? How do you get the budget deficits under control? So I think that will be a story for later on in the year. But in the meantime, the support will remain in place.
Yes, and you mentioned those low interest rates. A lot of investors staring at extraordinarily low returns on things like government bonds. Is that the outlook for 2021, continued low returns on those bonds and credit notes?
Well, yeah, I think the other part of that story, of course, is the central bank policy. And we just had the Fed yesterday, and they have basically reiterated their commitment to low interest rates. So, you know, they are helping to keep interest rates down, as are all the central banks. But of course, you know, the important point here is that it's not just the short rate that's being controlled by the central banks now, that with quantitative easing, they can put a lot of pressure on the longer end of the yield curve. So bond yields are being kept down along the curve, which keeps interest rates low. And I think, you know, given the state of government finances, the central banks will be under a lot of pressure to maintain that policy and keep interest rates low, so as to enable further fiscal stimulus if need be. So they are playing now quite a different role, I think, from what they did in the past. But the outcome for investors is low interest rates. And of course, credit rates have come down as well. And, you know, quantitative easing has been extended into the credit markets too. So, you know, there's real full scale financial repression going on here. And I think that will extend through 2021.
So with all that stimulus running through the economy, but interest rates low and growth pretty anemic, how does the world, particularly the West, not end up falling into like a stagnant economy, something like Japan?
Well, that is the worry. And, you know, the big increase in debt that we've seen that's been associated with coronavirus isn't going to go away very quickly. And so, you know, it does look a bit more like Japan. And that is a concern. And I think the low interest rates are going to help governments provide the fiscal stimulus. But I think, you know, this is a big topic. But one of the key differences between Japan and the West is that you get more creative destruction in the West. Now, that can be very painful, you know, allowing companies to go bust and reallocating resources in the economy. But it's something that Japan's not really done very well. Whereas we know in Europe and particularly in the US, that does tend to happen. So, you know, you do tend to get resources being moved around to where the growth is strongest. So I still don't think that we'll get a Japan-style outcome. But in terms of interest rates and bond yields, it's going to look a bit like Japan for some time.
On the flip side of that, if the vaccines do work, we're back near to normal around the second half of next year. There's been a lot of people sitting around, certainly saving a lot of money. Those have been lucky enough to be kept in jobs. We know household savings rates have gone up. They've been stuck inside for 18 months and it's all unleashed at once. Is there an issue with inflation?
Well, this is probably the most frequently asked question at the moment. And I mean, potentially there could be, because you're absolutely right. There's a lot of savings that's being built up. A lot of that increase in the money supply that we see around the world is actually sort of piling up in people's bank accounts. I mean, there will be a boost coming through. And that's one reason why we're pretty optimistic about the second half of next year, because that, I think, is when it starts to come through and people can start to travel again. They can go to hotels, restaurants and so on. And that spending will come through and we'll get a much fuller recovery as a result of that. We're not in the inflation camp. And the main reason for that is because there is a lot of spare capacity, because we know that as spending increases, there is a pool of labour waiting to come into the workforce to meet that. So supply will match demand and prices will not, you know, accelerate in a way that would alarm the central banks. There is a risk that, you know, if the stimulus continues for too long, then we do absorb all the capacity in the economy and we do find that wages start accelerating and inflation does pick up. But I think that's going to be a story for much later on in the cycle. We think we've probably got a couple of years of good growth ahead with low inflation, given the amount of slack in the world economy at the moment. So, you know, it's a very positive period. It's a real sort of sweet spot for the economy. You get strong growth, low inflation and low interest rates.
Okay, so no risk then in the immediate future of perhaps a taper tantrum part two?
Well, I didn't say no risk. And that's always a possibility because, you know, if somebody on the central banking side starts to saying, no, we've got to unwind this policy, the economies are all doing fine now, then, you know, you could start to see potentially some wobbles. And, you know, we can all remember what happened in the first taper tantrum when the Fed just simply started talking about ending QE. And you had some real volatility in markets. So don't rule that out. It's one of the scenarios that we have focused on quite a lot. It is a risk.
Okay, so for the time being, the support is there and it could be quite a nice growth environment towards the second half of next year, but there obviously are risks. So that's the economic perspective. In the second part of the show, we're going to dive a little deeper into the market perspective.
Get in touch with us by email at shorterspodcasts@shorters.com or visit our website, shorters.com/investor download.
So equity markets started the year on a fairly flat footing and then went into the mire as soon as the coronavirus broke out. It took full effect towards the end of February and March, where markets fell off a cliff, but they had an equally astonishing recovery too as policymakers came to the rescue, which we spoke about in the first part of the show. Then in November, they had a particularly strong month with markets like the FTSE up 13%, the result of the US election, shortly followed by the vaccine news, saw record amounts of money being put into equities, which resulted in the surge in stock markets. So, Johanna, could you just bring us up to date? What are the markets pricing in terms of a return to normality?
So if we start with bond markets, one could argue that yields have not normalised. So if we look at the US 10-year yield, for example, it's still over 0.5% below where it was last February and about 1% lower than a year ago. But this is justified by Fed policy. You know, rates at the front end are essentially pinning the curve down. And in fact, if we look at inflation expectations, for example, so using another lens, we find that we have reversed back to pre-pandemic levels in terms of what the market is expecting inflation-wise. And then if we turn to equity markets, at the market level, one could argue that a return to normality has already been priced because clearly we've seen markets rally in some cases to new highs. But again, if we look under, you know, at the underlying performance of cyclical sectors versus defensive sectors, if we look at the COVID winners versus the losers, I would argue there's probably still more upside from that angle. So I don't think the market has fully priced in normalisation.
Okay, so that probably answers my next question then. It seems like maybe, according to what you're saying, the great rotation, so that from those defensive growth stocks into the cyclical stocks, such as the banks and consumer-focused stocks, that's not quite over yet. Investors haven't quite missed the boat.
I mean, I probably wouldn't call it a great rotation. I think that people who use that term sometimes talk about us moving into a completely new regime with inflation being a problem. And, you know, I tend to agree with Keith that maybe it's a bit too early to call for that. I think we're still in an environment where, yes, inflation might have a bit of upside, but ultimately there's still a lot of spare capacity. So for me, it's more of a recovery trade. And yes, I think it has more room to run.
OK, so we know economically that Asia has recovered a little bit better than we have done in the West. Are there any particular markets that look more favourable than others?
Well, we have a preference for emerging equities and for Japan. So as you rightly point out, we have seen much greater normalisation in the East. And so obviously both those markets, you know, via China in the case of emerging markets and Japan, are exposed to that. But also we think that there is room, particularly on the industrial side, and markets like Japan have a high exposure to cyclical industrial sectors. So, those would be our favoured regions.
Okay, and we touched on the cyclicals versus defensives, but are there any particular sectors or asset classes that look more favourable than others?
Well, I think, you know, we have referred to the COVID as a great accelerator. I think Keith has been using that term, and I agree with him. So I think there's a sort of a shorter term trade, which is about normalization, which we've just discussed. But at the same time, COVID also did accelerate some trends that were already in place. And I think energy transition is an example of that. We've seen in the US, in Europe, for example, with the European Recovery Fund, you know, the disbursements are likely to be focused on areas supporting green infrastructure. And also some of Biden's statements more recently suggest that there's a shift in the US on this front as well. So I think people are focusing increasingly on an environment, on a future where one should aim to be less carbon intensive. And I think that energy transition as a theme is still one that has a lot of legs.
So just going back to COVID, we don't know exactly the long-term effects of the vaccines, although they have proven their efficacy, certainly in the short-term tests they've done. But we're also told the virus is mutating. So is there any risk that the stock markets in particular are climbing a wall of worry?
It's interesting because, you know, one thing I worry about is that we are positive on equities, but that is very much a consensus view. But I wonder just how much, you know, there's a distinction between what people are saying and how they're actually positioned. And I wonder how overweight people really are in stocks, because I do think there are still concerns about COVID. I think ultimately, look, we don't need everyone to be vaccinated. I think what we need is for us to learn to live with the virus. And I think that is happening on a number of fronts. Vaccines are part of that, but also better treatment, a better understanding on transmission, a greater use of masks, great availability of tests. All of this helps us to, even if the virus ends up lingering, and it might be that in a year's time we're still wearing masks, I think ultimately, I think the market's going to learn to live with it. And I think, as I said, maybe next Christmas we'll still be wearing masks, but I'm not sure the market will care.
And we spoke to Keith in the first section of the show about interest rate risks. Do you see any of that in the stock market at the moment?
Well, I think that if we see a bit more upward pressure on yields, it'll be because we're seeing a very strong recovery. And actually, I think that for the equity market, that would be quite positive, because a lot of the areas that would benefit from that have generally lagged in recent years. And so, you know, that rotation under the surface, I think there is still room to go. So for me, the early stages of yield normalization would be positive. It would be associated with reflation. And I would say the same about inflation. I don't see sort of rampant inflation, which is not connected to strong growth. I think to the extent we see yields going up and inflation going up, it would be because growth is really surprising on the upside. And there are ways of making money out of that within equities. It is a challenge for, obviously, for bonds.
Yeah, absolutely. And real assets as well? How do you view them?
Well, I mean, we need to be a bit careful because, of course, the traditional real assets are facing some headwinds. So we've got property, for example, which is somewhat affected by this new way of living that we've developed. So, you know, you need to be careful which part of the property market you're exposed to. I think then commodities have always been a classic inflation hedge. I think there is some room for those exposures, particularly given the industrial recovery we're seeing. But of course, at the same time, we're also trying to wean ourselves off oil. So it's not clear to me what the equilibrium price is on oil. So I think that turning to the 1970s playbook is probably wrong at this point, A, because I think we don't have that kind of inflation problem on our hands. And B, because actually the way to benefit from that inflation, you know, it's a completely different environment. So for me, for now, I'd still be focused on equities. I think to the extent that inflation picks up, you can make money out of certain sectors of the equity market. And I don't think you need to have hard inflation hedges in your portfolio just yet.
OK, so that's the market outlook. And in the final section of the show, we're going to look at what a good, bad and ugly outcome for markets and the economy looks like in 2021. OK, so let's start with the bad stuff then and try and end on the high. Keith, what does an ugly outcome look like for the economy in 2021?
I would say that an ugly outcome would be one where the vaccine doesn't work and, you know, people go off and get vaccinated, start to socialise again, and then they find that there's an outbreak of the virus. And, you know, it could be that the virus has mutated and it means that the vaccines fail. And that would obviously lead to the reintroduction of lockdown, restrictions, and the economy going back into recession. And I think it would also deal a really bad blow to confidence because, you know, at the moment, people are living on the hope that we'll get through this. And although things are still difficult at the moment, we've got better times ahead. But if the vaccine doesn't work, that would really be ugly, I think.
And Johanna, is that similar for markets as well? The vaccines don't work or the virus mutates and sends the markets into a tailspin again?
Yes, absolutely. For me, the worst outcome is one where growth fails to come through. And I imagine that would be caused by a more protracted virus problem that would mean lockdowns last for longer. And, you know, the really ugly scenario is one where we start to see second order effects, where we see employment rising or companies going bust. So, yeah, that for me would definitely be the ugly scenario. I don't think Keith and I'll be very happy if that happens.
I don't think any of us will be happy if that happens. So, Keith, so what's the slightly less ugly outcome, the bad outcome for the economy in 2021?
Well, I would say that the bad outcome would be where inflation comes back quite quickly, and that, you know, whilst we've been focusing a lot on the spare capacity in the economy, we have to remember that COVID is also a structural shock as well. So some jobs won't be coming back, and there will be people who could be unemployed for quite a long period of time. And that means that, you know, the pressure on wages and inflation will be greater than you would expect. And so inflation comes back quite quickly. Central banks have to raise interest rates, but growth is weak. So it's a real stagflationary scenario, which means that, you know, we're stuck with high unemployment, high budget deficits, and potentially higher interest rates as well. So it's not a good outcome, economically speaking.
And Johanna, what does that bad outcome look like for markets in 2021?
Well, I think from a market standpoint, and here I'm talking as an investor rather than a human being, the bad outcome can be slightly different in the sense that you could see an environment where we get back to some kind of normality, which of course is great for humanity, and I'd be very happy about that. But that arguably markets do less well because that recovery has been priced in, you know, because of a valuation problem. So, you know, this year has been a good year for Wall Street and not such a good year for Main Street. Maybe next year could be a better year for Main Street or the High Street, maybe not the High Street, but, you know, for the economy, but less good for financial markets. So that probably would be a bad outcome from a market perspective, as I said, not as a human being.
OK, so let's end on a high. Keith, what's a good outcome for the economy next year?
OK, well, a good outcome is a strong recovery, widespread take-up of the vaccine, which proves to be effective, very little in the way of scarring effects, so that people actually shrug off the past year and go out and spend, businesses invest, activity improves, budget deficits come down, and unemployment comes down as well. So, you know, a couple of years down the road, we can, you know, sort of look back and think, right, that's all behind us now.
And Johanna, how does that work in the markets in 2021?
Completely agree. I think it would be great to see a proper reflation. I mean, the last time we saw signs of that was in 2016, which was 4 years ago, and it was proved to be quite short-lived. I'd be delighted to see a proper upcycle. It's been a while since I've seen one. Often, Keith and I look at the GDP outturn of the last few years. We've been stuck in this sort of low growth environment for quite a long time. And nothing would please me more to see a very vigorous economic recovery.
Yeah, I completely concur with that. Keith and Johanna, thanks very much for chatting to us today. And that was the final show of the year. Thank you very much for joining us in what has been a very difficult 2020. Hopefully 2021 will be far more positive for us all, and we very much look forward to that. There'll be a new show starting on January the 7th. We'll start with a two-parter on China, so do join us again then. But as always, you can find out more at schroders.com/insights. There's loads of outlooks for 2021, which covers all markets on there. You can listen to more at schroders.com/the investor download as well. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows will be available in the new year every Thursday from 5 p.m. and most Mondays from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, most importantly, have a happy holiday and keep safe and go well. Cheers.